When told well, a story activates multiple parts of the brain, which means you're creating multiple memory traces, which means you're then increasing the likelihood that something will be retrieved a lot more easily later on.
All right, it's time for another episode of Grow the Dream. Today,
Dr. Carmen Simon.
And how your brain decides.
Ooh, and how to leverage that in your content.
From an actual cognitive neuroscientist.
Right now.
Oftentimes, it's the ones that are successful loved what they did so they could persevere when, you know, when it got really tough. And the ones that didn't love it quit.
I learned many great lessons from my father, not the least of which was that you can fail at what you don't want. So you might as well take a chance on doing what you love.
Welcome to the most indispensable show for people doing the hard work of growing your business. It's the marketing podcast by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. Welcome to Grow the Dream.
All right, welcome to episode 45 of...
Oh, Grow the Dream.
Oh, that was well sung, Josh.
I didn't sing anything.
We have no Josh's jingle for you this week because we surprised him again.
We did.
Oh, well. So
it's been a couple of weeks. I'm rusty.
I know.
True, that's true.
And we have to harass you for not being here while Dan Pink was on the show.
Okay, so I listened to that episode.
Oh, yeah? What'd you think?
You know, Dan's a pretty cool guy. I really missed out.
Yeah, you did. Yep. Yeah, he was a great interview. And great content to learn from. Wow.
Yep. Well, you're in luck. We have another great one today. Before we introduce our guest, though, this is Komodo Dragon.
Yeah. And is it's good stuff, too.
Who donated that?
I did. Oh. I went to Starbucks and bought it. It's actually one of the Starbucks dark roasts.
It's a better story when it comes from one of our listeners.
It actually would have been a better story had you not said the word Starbucks.
I know, but I have to be honest. It came from Starbucks because our brew of the day has been lacking lately. We haven't had a good option.
Let me taste this. It's all right.
Yeah, it's good. It's good with shortbread cookies, too.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the holidays, so we had to bring in some shortbread. And, Rod, I knew you would like this. I ground the beans extra fine, and I left them in the pot extra long.
You the man.
Just for you.
Just the way it's done.
All right. Right. So, I wanted this to be memorable, the coffee.
Oh, really? And why is that, David?
I wanted it to be memorable because I'm trying to figure out how to tie this into our guest. And well, I'm not doing a great job.
You've got the keyword anyway.
All right.
Yes, that's right. You were very good at that.
Okay, so I was at Inbound 15 in Boston, as were you, Josh, several months ago.
Yeah.
And I saw this session title jump off the page. It was called The Neuroscience of Memorable Content. And it was going to be conducted by Dr. Carmen Simon. And I thought, I need to go to that because we create content all the time. We've talked about the fact that content is, there's like a dearth of content. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, what was the word that we use? Like this cataclysm that's coming or whatever with the, you know, everybody's getting overloaded with content. Anyway, there's more content than ever.
Yes.
And we need it to be effective. So, I mean, we're putting a lot of time into this. It needs to work.
So, yeah, because there's a couple steps. You have to break through, you know, the deep morass of content out there. And then you've got to break through in such a way and put it in such a way that people will actually retain it and be able to act on it. And that, I believe, is where we can segue into our guest this week.
That's right. So I was so thrilled with the content in that session that I felt like we needed to invite Dr. Carmen Simon to be with us.
Yes.
And so here she is, cognitive neuroscientist and co-founder of Rexy Media. Dr. Carmen Simon, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here. And I have the transition from the coffee that you're all enjoying to how we create the memorable content.
See, I should have just asked you first.
Great. Wow. The show is yours.
What I'm thinking about is that one of the biggest questions that I typically get is why is memory so important, especially in business? Because, yeah, it's nice to sit by the fire and have a cup of coffee and reminisce on the past. But where business is concerned, when we create content, the reason that memory is critical is because it influences decision-making. Ultimately, anybody out there who creates content create it so that people read it, click on it, like it, share it, embed it in their own website. So they act on it in some way. And that's why we're intrigued by memory as it's linked to decision making. So then we have to ask another question. How does the brain decide? Because every single moment for us, for the brain, is a choice, almost a temptation. Do you have the Starbucks or do you have something else? Do you take a nap or do you continue working? Do you reach for the broccoli or do you reach for the chocolate?
Easy call.
Some of these are really easy so far.
Yeah. Coffee and chocolate.
Should we have another drink?
Yeah, right?
Wow.
Each moment is a choice. Each moment is a temptation. The same for our customers. They too have choices and each moment is a temptation for them as well. So when we look at neuroscience and we ask, what do we know from it in terms of how the brain decides? What we're learning is that the brain decides in three ways, or there are three paths towards decision making. One is reflexive. So often you make decisions based on pre-wired techniques that we have, or pre-wired templates, so to speak.
Like I've made this decision before, right?
And it's embedded in you. It's not something that you have learned. It's innate.
Okay.
Since we have
almost a genetic sort of
exactly
thing.
We have an immediate reaction towards sweet taste, towards bitter taste. We have an immediate reaction towards certain odors, or towards youthfulness, or flowers, or altruism, or the ability to control your environment. That you decide towards it no matter what. A second path towards decision making is habitual, which is where your coffee drinking comes into play. So when you say we want to make coffee memorable, that is often a given, because once you form that habit, habits are conscious at first, but then become automatic. So if you're a coffee drinker, by default, coffee is memorable for you without even having to think about it. So while reflexes are innate and subconscious and automatic, reflexes are conscious at first, but then become automatic afterwards with repetition. And the third path towards decision making is goal-oriented. So if you reached for the broccoli and not for the chocolate, it's because perhaps you had some goals to lose weight. And unlike reflexes and habits, goals are conscious, so they require a lot more energy, which is why when you make decisions based on goals, sometimes we find it a little bit hard because we have to think. And given the brain the chance to decide to think or not to think, quite often we prefer not to spend that cognitive energy. So if you keep in mind those three paths towards decision making, the reflexes, the habits, and the goals, then it's a little bit easier to think, how do I create content in a way that people pay attention, especially knowing that they're overwhelmed. And if you bombard people with content at the end of a day, for instance, or after they have just finished a project, or after they have just endured some mental hardship, and we're hitting them with goal-oriented kind of content, that it's no wonder that a lot of it gets lost.
Well, and I think that does happen often to us, but and I think we need to spend some time there. But I think before we get too much further, could you help us, for those that may be in our audience that aren't familiar with what a cognitive neuroscientist is? I always love titles like that have a lot of syllables.
Yes,
I feel like it's impressive.
Those are impressive, but just a fancy ways of saying this. When you look at the brain, you have the ability to study it in several ways. One of the ways to approach it is through the lens of strictly neuroscience, which is the field that studies the structure and function of the brain. So for instance, if I were to take all three of you and put each of you in an MRI scanner, I would study different regions, I would study different functions of those regions, and with improved technology these days, we can do just that.
Can you do that?
Now you can also study the brain from the standpoint of mental functions, such as attention or memory or decision-making or creativity or problem-solving. And that is the field that is called cognitive psychology, the field that studies those mental functions. And if you combine the two, if you take neuroscience and you merge it with cognitive psychology, then you get cognitive neuroscience, which means now we now know more about the brain in terms of how attention takes place and how memories are formed. We've made it to the point where you can literally and physically see inside the when you put the brain inside the scanner and you're doing all these brain imaging studies, the birth of a memory, which is huge.
Wow.
Do we know everything about the brain? Definitely not. We're decades and decades away from it, but we now know a lot more. So that's why it's an exciting field to be in.
So I'm curious, this is a total aside, but are you familiar with the works of Dr. Caroline Leaf?
Is that the mindset?
She's also a neuroscientist. I don't know if it's cognitive neuroscience, but she's written some books, Switch On Your Brain, and that sort of thing, where she's talking about how we can rewire our brains through basically habitual reaction. She goes into a lot of science of it that went over my head when I read the book. But but some of the stuff you're saying is just bringing it back to my memory somewhere in there.
I love that.
She's one of the other. She's about the only other neuroscientist I've actually read much of, and so it's interesting that both of you, we have two female neuroscientists. I think it is cognitive neuroscience because she does combine the two. She also throws in biblical stuff, but there was focused on the science.
There is an author who wrote a book called Mindset named Carol Dweck. So I wonder if
that's what
okay.
So yes. just to make sure we're not crossing wires, which is apparently a third female who's studying all of this stuff. So it's good. We feel like it's great to have guests like you on the show that are working in these areas that we just aren't, you know. I mean, it struck me as very fascinating at Inbound that at a marketing conference there would be a cognitive neuroscientist, but it makes sense.
It makes total sense. Yeah, yeah. No, it does. And Garmin, as I was looking over some of your stuff in preparation for this, it really was making sense. And so maybe you could sort of launch into that just a little bit based on, you know, what you've explained here and what you understand. Why is it that this is so important to, entrepreneurs and business owners and that sort of thing and business people? Why is what you are learning and understanding and teaching important for them to know and put into use?
It's important in several ways. First of all, quite often we create content from a standpoint of opinion versus science. And evidence trumps opinion because if you only base your techniques of distributing content and creating it on some experiences from the past, perhaps, or trial and error, you have to reinvent the formula for success every single time. Whereas if you create something that is science-based and evidence-based, what science promises is to give us consistent and reliable results. So that means whether you create content for two people or 200 or thousands, whether you create content in the sense of you simply have conversations with people or you have formal presentations, the medium and the delivery type doesn't matter as much because you're still taking into consideration how your audience's brains process that information. And since we're talking about the audience's brains, it makes sense to embed in your content creation techniques things that are related to the brain, because everybody in your audience has one, or so we would hope.
Let's hope so. Yes. So what type of techniques would you be talking about here?
So when I talk about the techniques that then merge neuroscience and the cognitive psychology, I typically start with the importance of memory, because we were saying earlier, people make decisions based on what they remember, not on what they forget.
Mm-hmm. You know, and this was one of the points that you made in your session at Inbound that I thought was really fascinating, because I think we have some mistaken ideas about what people remember, right?
Mm-hmm.
You talked about what people hear versus what they read versus what they see, and we have this sort of popular belief that maybe there are some numbers associated with those different methods of delivery, right?
Yeah, and those are definitely some myths that are circulating around. You may hear statistics such as we only remember 10% of what we see, 20% of what we hear, 30% of what we see and hear, and the numbers go up from there. There is no study out there that has shown such conveniently progressive statistics. There is no such thing.
Yeah, those all seem actually kind of high to me anyway in my personal experience. If I remember 1% of what I knew, I feel like I'd be doing well.
Well, 87% of all statistics are made up on the spot.
Thank you very much. Yes.
That's exactly. So we have to be cautious about some statistics that are out there. That's there's another reason why we should be so grateful for having some scientific findings out there to help us debunk some of these myths. However, there are some things that do stand true. For instance, there is a theory and a formula called the forgetting curve. And according to that, this is a theory that has been lasting for over 100 years. And we are reminded that whenever we expose our audiences to new content and they come to that content without any intention to memorize it, so just like the three of you right now came to this recording and to this show without the intent of saying, you know, everything she says, I am going to remember tomorrow. I'm going to make a conscious effort of it. You're just coming to the conversation and maybe there's something that will resonate with you. Maybe there is something that you will forget in a few days. Who knows? Unless you take some notes and start repeating that stuff, it's hardly likely that that you'll stay there for a long time. So the forgetting curve reminds us of this. Whenever you expose people to information and they don't come to it with the conscious intent to remember it, they will forget about 90% of it after 2 days.
Okay.
And
I believe it.
That 90 is not a strict 90. So let's look at it as more of a metaphorical number. And that metaphorical 10 then that stays there tends to stay there for a prolonged period of time. So we forget fast at first and slower later. And what I coach business presenters and business content creators to do is not to worry so much about the abundance of things that people forget, but rather be in control of that metaphorical 10% that they tend to take away and tie that to a decision that you want people to make in your favor.
Okay, so is there any way that you can, going into it, identify the 10%? And all right, if I know, here's the presentation, but this is what I really want them to take away from it. How do you present that in a way that they will that will fall into their 10% memory?
Exactly right. So the mistake that a lot of people make is that, first of all, they walk into an interaction with a customer or they create a piece of content without the clarity of their own 10%. And that sometimes takes time. Sometimes you're so familiar with your own topic that you know exactly what you want your audience to remember. But sometimes there is just so many things that you hope they remember. And if you're not consciously in charge of that, then not only do people have little memory of what you say, but they have random memory. And there are huge negative consequences of random memory, because imagine if I speak to the three of you and in 2 days, one of you will have extracted something and another one of you will remember something else and another one of you will remember something else. And then you have to make a decision in my favor, then that will be a lot longer for you to reach something that is unified amongst the three of you, because all the three of you have different memories of this encounter. Mm-hmm. So if you remember in that presentation, I was giving the example of good 10% messages. There is that author, Michael Pollan, he published that book, In Defense of Food.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you see the book and you see it says In Defense of Food. So that is his overall 10% message. He's defending food. And then he has three supporting points. He says, eat food, not too much, mainly plants. Mm-hmm. And it's such a concise guide for diet and for how we eat, whether we agree with it or not. That's a different story.
Yeah, but practicing it's a little tricky. But
practicing it, it's what the skill will be. But at least he has the clarity of that message and the concision of it, which I think that a lot of business content creators are lacking. Would you say the same thing?
Oh, I would say not only are we lacking that clarity, but we tend to, at least for me, I'll speak for me, I want people to remember 100% of it.
Right, because everything
we say
is gold, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm the guy you need to listen to.
So clearly that's the first hurdle that all presenters need to get over.
140 characters, dude.
Yeah.
Listen, seriously. This is actually, this was so disheartening to me. This part of it was like, I want so much to be an effective communicator that the 10% rule doesn't apply. So
distill.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So Carmen, what about the idea then, is there value in short presentations that are really focused as opposed to longer ones? Because if you take 10%, you figure, well, if I go 3 hours, they're going to get 30 minutes. They're going to, or whatever it might be. You know,
I'm glad that you asked that.
Yeah, what's the curve?
Yeah, exactly.
Often I get the same question of, well, if they only remember 10%, then why just not give them the 10%, do the 140 characters? Send people a text message and be done with it. But here's the idea. The 90%, and again, we're referring to these numbers as strictly metaphorical because mm-hmm. it might be 89 and it might be, or 1% like you're saying earlier that you remember. So the idea that the 90% is in service of the 10%. Otherwise, if you didn't have the 90, you wouldn't even have the hope for the 10. So look at the 90% as sidekicks to make the 10 stand out. Because ultimately, memories are formed if we have memory traces. And in order to form some memory traces, that means you have to give some elaboration. You have to go into some details in order to add color and context around the memories that you're forming. So for instance, what I enjoyed at the beginning of the show is how you placed us in context. And we could picture you sitting at the desks and sipping on that dark roast. And you put Starbucks in our minds. And you had some details in there and some color. And that's the reason you are making the 10% stand out. Remember that book, The Tipping Point?
Oh, what a great book, yeah.
Great book. And if you were to ask somebody to summarize that book, it would probably be a 500-word summary, and maybe even less. But it was, if it wasn't for the rest of the 250-plus pages, even those 500 words would not stand out.
Okay, so your bottom line there is that you don't necessarily need to shorten presentations, but you need to create presentations going into it, knowing what your 10% is that you want the audience to take away, and then you build the other 90% around that all the time. So it's always sort of pointing back to it. It's always hooked to it, whether it's color and context or whether it's anecdotes
exactly
or
right.
whatever. Everything mm-hmm. else is always continually pointing back to the 10%. And then is there value in repetition?
Definitely value in repetition. Repetition will be the mother of memory. Ah. And here's another myth then that we are debunking with science. Less is not more in content.
Ooh.
There, I said it.
We have some data recently that was showing that. The longer form content really lasts a lot longer, and they grow over time as far as, you know, downloads, reads, that sort of thing goes. So
yeah,
I'm sorry,
yeah.
Keep going on that. That's very interesting to us.
Yeah, so less is not more. Because you need, I would replace that adage with less but better. So as you're walking into a content creation environment, and I use that phrase loosely because it could be written content, it could be blogs, it could be a conversation much like we're having right now, it could be a formal presentation, whatever your content space is, walk into it with the humility of a fairly concise and short 10% message. And like you were summarizing earlier, build around it with a lot of context and storytelling and color and character and details, but only around the core message and nothing else. Because otherwise what happens is that people deviate and they go on different branches and tangents and things that are not so important to the message.
So you don't like the bunny trails is what you're saying?
Don't like the what?
The bunny trails.
Yeah,
the rabbit trails. Unless those trails are on purpose to point back
exactly.
at the 10%.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Man.
Yeah, take
that
them and
kills
use them
me.
Consciously. Yeah.
So I love these C's that you're tossing out. Color, context, character. Now I lost one of them. Sorry.
Clarity.
You didn't have
the
10,
clarity.
So I only...
Well, no, yeah. I wasn't using those necessarily as a list, but if you want to get concrete about what it is that we can use to make the 90 truly act as a sidekick, we can indeed speak about those. So let's just focus on context for
Rod,
a minute.
Rod, start making a list.
Yeah, start making a list.
I've been taking notes like crazy here.
Context is definitely important because if you think about how do we retrieve our memories? We retrieve our memories in, let me ask you a question. Would you be able to tell with fairly accurate detail what you were wearing 2 days ago?
Not a clue.
I'd have to look at my calendar to see what 2 days ago was.
I'd ask my wife.
Okay, so there you go. There's our three answers.
No.
So the answer is a unified no from all three of you.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, you know what? This might be relevant. I just tagged it to what was going on 2 days ago, and because of that, I know what I was wearing.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember what was going on 2 days ago. Like you said, I'd have to look at my calendar.
That was my crazy day, yeah.
But whether you can or cannot retrieve the answer, even when you're trying to retrieve the answer, what your brain just did right now is it went back to 2 days ago, and you're wondering, so what is it that I was doing on that day? Where was I? What was going on? I guarantee that if 2 days ago, if any one of you had a job interview or a breakup where your divorce got finalized or you met a new partner or you had a new boss or there was some strong emotion around that, you would definitely remember what you were wearing. So the point I'm making is that whenever you retrieve memories, you go to a context, and that context is filled with sensory details. And the more we build those in people's minds, the easier we make it to retrieve memories. So a physical context or even a conceptual context, like sometimes people build in other people's minds a mental schema, like they would say, what are the three P's of marketing? Or what are the three R's of outstanding leadership? So you kind of picture some three circles.
The 10 C's of good content Rod's working on right now.
It needs to be 9, though, because it has to be an odd number.
Those are kind of dangerous, because sometimes somebody will have the three E's of leadership and somebody will have the three E's of marketing, and then after a while you won't know which one is which.
True.
And what about visuals as far as helping in memory?
Exactly. So when we're saying context, notice that you can already picture the office. So the way that you open the show, for instance, we could picture you in a studio of sorts, and you have some desks and there is the coffees, and you build some sensory details in our minds. And those could be pictures, those could be sounds, those could be tastes. Like I love how you're mentioning the coffee and how it was tasting.
That's right.
So the more the sensory details are apparent, the stronger the memory. And unfortunately, what happens in business content, one of the reasons it's forgotten very quickly is because it stays abstract for too long. We feel like we don't often have time for those rich details in terms of sights and sounds and smells. Who has time to talk about those when we can just talk about the three V's of big data?
So one of the things that comes through then when you start talking about this is you're adding all of this detail, and some of it I would think is about stimulation, right? You're trying to stimulate the mind of the recipient and so forth. And we've seen other studies that talk about that you know, eliciting response from people, if in fact response is what you're after, is in part about getting them to be stimulated in some way, like arousal, but I don't mean in the sensual term, or I'm talking just in terms of mental arousal, right? Or
we gotcha.
Oh, you can totally mean it in a sexual term.
Yeah, but that's just not where I was going, but sure.
with the idea of exactly right, just activating parts of the brain and multiple parts of the brain in order to build those memory traces. So notice what happens to your brain right now if I said, he had leathery hands. So you're only hearing my words, my sound, my voice, but you can also picture what I'm saying.
Immediately.
Or if I said to you, the room smelled like cinnamon. I'm activating yet another part of the brain. Or if I said to you, he kicked the ball, now I'm activating the motor cortex in your brain. And this is why a lot of people say, well, say, tell more stories, share more stories. The reason, from a neuroscience perspective, storytelling works for memory is because when told well, a story activates multiple parts of the brain, which means you're creating multiple memory traces, which means you're then increasing the likelihood that something will be retrieved a lot more easily later on.
Boom! Wow, that was really good.
Let's put that into 140 characters.
Okay. I think we're good now.
was that the 10% you wanted us to get?
Because I feel like I got my 10% right there.
The 10% for our show could be simply to say to everybody out there, be in control of your own 10%. And all the other details that we're sharing here and then that we're forming all along are to feed into that core message of stay in control of what they remember, because if they remember, they're more likely to decide in your favor.
So as you're describing this, I'm imagining telling a story like from a pulpit. Stage. Speaking, like telling the main point from the beginning, telling a story that supports that main point, going back and like supporting that main point with some facts, and then telling another story, and then kind of like wrapping it all up in the end. But I'm curious, like how, well, first of all, I'm curious, like if that's good way to kind of clarify how you do it vocally. But I'm curious too about writing. What's different about, do you use like bold? Obviously you use images, but in today's age, would people just like scroll so quickly around stuff? They're looking for headers, you know, like they don't
You're picturing a blog post or something right now, or like a piece of content, an article online, right?
Yeah. I feel like it's not apparent in my mind, at least, exactly how we accomplish the 10%.
Imagine when we're talking about, the sequence of events, that sequence can happen verbally, like we're doing it right now. It can happen in writing, like you'll do it in a blog. And what we're getting at is, what should be the balance between something that we vary, a stimulus that we vary, which keeps the attention for prolonged periods of time, and something that we maintain constant? Because that's where the balance needs to happen. You see, when sometimes people say, well, has our attention span decreased lately? And it's not like our attention span has been decreasing so much. It's that one thing that has changed in our brains lately is the fact that our threshold for stimulation has changed, or we constantly want to be stimulated in some way. We want the pictures and the variety, and then switch from this stimulus to that stimulus, and that's what the brain is after, which is great, but something still has to stay constant. So if we were to respond to this, what's the proper sequence for a blog, for instance, and let's just say that the range for that blog is maybe 500 to 800 words or so, you would vary the stimulation enough to keep the brain engaged, but you would keep one message constant and looking exactly the same. So you would identify whatever your core message is. You would repeat it at least two or three times through the length of that blog in the same shape. And then the rest of it can have some variety. It can have the infographic. It can have the provocative picture. It could have maybe a link to a soundtrack of sorts. So you see, you have that variety of stimulation that way.
So it's not just about visual variety, but it's just, and you're talking about including various, maybe even multiple media types to help support the thing. What about simple things like sentence length? You know, like I've seen some studies, or maybe not studies, but I've seen some people suggest that there might have been research. Maybe not because I don't remember.
You remembered the main point.
That there may be something involved in sentence length. Like if you use sentences that are all, let's say, 10 words, after a while, you know.
Well, the varying of the length is typically thought to be important to keeping attention for the reader.
And that's the journalist approach, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. And so does that make sense from a memory point of view, Carmen, that you vary up the sentence length, and some are, you know, short, declarative, punchy, and others add a little more depth and nuance in them, but they're not all the same, basically.
Yeah, for sure. So it's the same technique that people would use in movies, where you would have some scenes that last longer, and you would have some scenes that are very punchy and toward almost chaotic, where you barely know what's going on. Same in writing, where you would have lengthy sentences and some sentences that only have two or three words. It's all about varying the stimulus. But yet, even in writing and in some good writing, the core message is still present in the background, and the core message does not change. There is a finding that has changed a lot about how we look at memory lately. And as you know, or you may have read elsewhere, the hippocampus in your brain is a region that's responsible for memories. Mm-hmm. And in our hippocampus, we have these cells that are called place cells. And place cells have no limitations in terms of how much capacity they can have for memory, whereas some other areas we have capacity limitations. Like, for instance, your short-term memory doesn't hold more than four items at a time. But for place cells, we can have unlimited information in there. And place cells are responsible for us remembering things that do not move. And from an evolutionary perspective, they were created because it served us well when we could remember where the lakes were or where the trees were, so that we can survive. This is why you now remember very well where you left your toothbrush, but you may not remember where you left your glasses. One moves and one doesn't move. And it's no different when you create content for some of your audiences. There's so much that moves these days, and we make it move because we feel like we have to keep our audiences stimulated constantly. But if something stays put, so to speak, I'm speaking more metaphorically now, but keep something that is constant and in the same spot, so that the brain can hook onto that and we enjoy things that do not move.
Okay, so is that another way of referring to the 10% and other things can be moving around it but still referring back to it? Okay.
Exactly right, exactly right. So you can have all sorts of rotations and all sorts of stimulation that you like as long as something stays put.
Wow.
Wow.
So the bunny trails have to connect.
If you're going to do them, they have to be on purpose.
The images have to connect. Uh-huh. The stories have to connect.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
What else has to connect? Everything.
Yeah, I don't know. For some reason, I was just picturing the center of a spider web, and I'm afraid that that actual metaphor might not work very well. Although, I don't know. It's sticky.
It could. It yeah. definitely could. Just have all the roads converging. And the uh-huh. more that you involve people in the convergence of those roads, the stronger the memory as well. Why do you think that so many people say, teach me how to create engaging content. I want mm-hmm. engagement. I want participation. Well, the thing about engagement and participation is that they contribute to memory in the sense that when you have somebody physically or mentally participating in something, that means they're generating additional memory traces for those moments. And that's the reason why we want people to not be passive consumers of information.
Gotcha.
How do we activate people? How do we, I think in general, if we're applying everything that we, do you have anything specific as far as like, how do you elicit, so we're talking about eliciting memory, but then how do you actually get somebody to respond and take action on something that they found interesting? Is it about the question? Is it about the call to action? Or is it something else?
So we go back to those three paths towards decision making that we were talking earlier. We said people decide what to do next based on an innate behavior or a reflex, based on a habit or based on a goal. So if you want to influence what people do with your content once they remember it, then it has to be tied to one of those three things. So for instance, we said innately we react to altruism, we react to the ability to control our environment, we react to sex. So you just cannot help but react. So connecting your content to that. So this is why when you create a piece of content and you promise people to take charge of, even simply using those words, you know that it's a lot harder for the brain to look away because it wants to be in control of its surroundings. Or hook your content into something that people find habitual. A lot of times the mistakes that content creators make is that they feel like they have to start with novelty and start from scratch all the time and surprise others all the time. And those are great techniques, but sometimes they fall flat simply because it's harder for people to start new habits versus indulge in the ones that they already have. So let's just say that I had a platform that I wanted to sell to you about some marketing benefits, whatever it was. I would find it a lot easier to sell you something if you're already using a marketing platform and mine hooks into that. Let's just say that you are Salesforce users. And I would say, hey, here's a plugin, and it embeds right into Salesforce, which is already part of your habits. So you only have to learn something that is fairly small and not expensive. So much cognitive energy versus start from scratch.
Okay. And if I'm sorry, go ahead, finish that, please.
Well, and the third is, if you want to appeal to people's goals, that tool will dictate what they do next and how they act. But for that one, you must make sure that they have enough energy for that goal. And usually for that to happen, then that means you have to tie it to some strong needs that that people have. And what are some of our typical needs? It, quite often, what's intriguing to us from a psychology standpoint is for every single need for yourself that you identify, it's very likely that you'll experience a moment where you need exactly the opposite. And I'm curious if that's true for the three of you. So have you found yourself in a spot where you needed structure, but then have you found yourself in a spot where you needed unpredictability?
Sure. I mean, we're all entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. So I think part of what we seek, I think, as entrepreneurs, maybe, I mean, I'm thinking for myself here, perhaps, is, but just the ability to step outside of structure. Mm-hmm. You know, I
could use some structure,
but then,
right now.
but I've had a lot of unpredictability lately.
But right, I can see the other side. Yeah,
what we realize is that's why I'm always looking for the perfect CRM, you know, program and whatnot, just the perfect thing to help my structure, to help me be efficient, to help me go through ABC. But in the broader picture, it's far more you know, liberating and freedom wise?
This is a good question.
And it's interesting for you to bring up that particular type of need, because I immediately went to Maslow, right? You know, with the hierarchy. But I'm not sure that belongs in. Well, I guess it could be in there somewhere.
And that's where I'm too. But I didn't know where to go after that.
It can't belong. The one that I have been using lately, you know, all these things have been evolving, and every few years there is a psychologist that comes up with a different mental model for our needs. The one that I have grown fond lately is this one that identifies three, but it also acknowledges that we also need the opposite. And the three and their opposites are the need for structure versus unpredictability, the need for privacy versus the need for people, and the need for personal survival versus transcendence. And I can relate to all three and their opposites. And one piece of advice that I have for any business content creator out there is, if you make a promise to your audience, and perhaps that's tied to your 10% message, constantly acknowledge some ways of its opposite to be true. So if you're saying, look, you're using my platform to gain access to thousands and thousands of people of your own audience, perhaps, so it's the need for people. Also say you can protect your privacy this way, or you can also do some individual-oriented kind of things. Constantly acknowledging for all the needs that we have, there will be that time that you will need exactly the opposite.
Interesting.
Wow.
I wouldn't have thought to put the two together. I would have thought, okay, you make some pieces of content for one thing, and then another piece appealing to the exact opposite. But you say you put them together.
Put them together because that alleviates skepticism. If we're talking about decision making, quite often people don't act or don't take the next step just because there is a tiny touch of skepticism in their mind. And by acknowledging opposites, then you put yourself in a position where you're more encompassing. You have a more unified message, something that acknowledges that things are not always and constantly one way all the time.
So acknowledging their objections without saying, this is one common objection people have. You, as the writer, just take the position as if it's part of, picturing a blog article, so pardon me for that. But I think hopefully you understand what I just said.
Yeah, so you would write to each side of the needs. Yes,
and acknowledge that the opposite may be true. Just like in here, we're talking about memory and what it is that we can do to remember and make sure that things are memorable. But at some point, it's also beneficial to bring the conversation around, is there a situation where it's important for people to forget stuff? And the answer is yes, because quite often we make mistakes. Quite often we have blunders. Like, look at companies that have released messages out there, and they were so ashamed to have been part of that. Who was it? There was a company out there that said, my brother, it was a T-shirt for girls that said, my brother did my homework. And so then you have to release all sorts of statements saying that now maybe that message wasn't appropriate. So yet you still want to maintain customer loyalty. We have to acknowledge that we all may make mistakes, and forgetting is actually in our favor. If people remembered every single thing that we did all the time, many of us would not be in business, many of us would not be married anymore.
Well, no political candidate would ever be elected.
It would freeze you if you remembered all of your mistakes and all of your misjudgments. You would hardly ever be able to make another decision going forward.
Exactly. So discarding an impractical past definitely helps us evolve.
Rose-colored glasses. Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And this is why there's so much negative news that comes out when Apple does their announcement. A bunch of companies, you know, they'll release the sad stuff they don't want anybody to hear about, because the Apple news just eclipses everything.
Sure,
it's crazy.
Like the Friday dump in politics.
Yeah.
Right.
I have a feeling we could have this conversation for hours, you know, because you've got so much material. And I was thinking back to your presentation at Inbound, and you covered a lot of topics that we haven't even gotten to yet. And so let's do two things. One is, Let's talk about the book that you're working on. And secondly, let's talk about what you and the team that you're part of actually do. So so the book first, is it safe to assume you're assembling this body of knowledge that we're kind of referring to today into the book?
Yeah, definitely so. I've been researching to ask this question and answer it. What is it that we want people to remember and act on? And there is that link between memory and decision-making that I was talking about. A lot of us would aspire at creating persuasive content. And in order to get to persuasion, you have to be on people's mind. So the phrase that people sometimes use is, how do you get to be top of mind? Well, I'm taking that literally in the sense, and I'm saying, well, you have to be in people's memories in order for them to decide in your favor. And the book is called Impossible to Ignore: How to Create Memorable Content and Influence Decisions Using Brain Science. That's the subtitle.
Love it. Yeah. And that's coming out next year, right?
That's coming out on June 3rd. McGraw-Hill is the publisher. And it's been a real journey to figure out how to divide some of these guidelines, science-based guidelines, into something practical that business content, especially those who create B2B content, for instance. Sometimes people say, well, my content is very dry and very complex, very technical. How do I take some of these evidence-based guidelines and include them when I'm not a graphic artist? I may not even be the most amazing storyteller out there, yet I still want people to sign and buy from me, or at least to like me in some way, or click and share.
That's cool. And this whole episode, I keep thinking how well this ties in with Jonah Berger's episode, which is episode 21. I looked it up. Ah. And his book on...
Contagious.
Yeah, Contagious. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Once you start talking about how do you get people... to take action, you started naming some of the things that reminded me of that book. So,
oh yeah, well, even awesome. Fitting into contexts, you know, like that already exists. One of the things that came to my mind right away was Mike. Yeah. You know, it's Wednesday, so it's Hump Day, so it's time for us to play the stupid camel commercial with the you know, Mike.
Speaking of, it's Marketing Mondays.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
right. We're growing the dream.
We insist on trying to make that a thing. Carmen,
we're just doing it very poorly, is all.
Yeah, except that people listen to podcasts when they listen to them.
That's the problem.
Yeah, we release on Monday, but that doesn't mean people listen on Monday.
Right,
but they know it's released on Monday.
Right, there's that.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe we need to reinforce that. That needs to be the thing that doesn't move.
Well, they know now.
One of the things.
Okay, but we also wanted to know from Carmen what she's doing with her team there.
Yeah, so talk about Rexy Media. What do you guys do?
Our team takes any kind of business content and applies these science-based principles that I've been sharing and makes it memorable and actionable. There are three elements that we typically include in the formula that we apply. We look at memory first, and then we say, what is it that you want your audience to remember, and what decisions should they make in your favor? And then we also add the component of attention at the beginning of that continuum. So you would see attention, memory, and decision-making as a continuum that we follow when we analyze people's content and we transform it in some way. We do it in two ways. We either have workshops where we teach other people how to do it, but sometimes people say, well, we don't have time to transform our own content. Can you do it for us? And we do that as well.
Ooh, wow. So this brings up one of the things that I thought was really fascinating about your presentation at Inbound. So you got a room full of people. You have a nice big screen. And I'm not sure that this would have worked as well if you were in a room with a smaller screen. But somehow the screen was massive enough that it was very, very easy to see your presentation and the details of it. But one of the things that I spotted was that your main point, it didn't feel like slides, first of all. I know, and I assume you were using Keynote to build your presentation. Is that correct?
PowerPoint.
You were using PowerPoint, really?
Yep.
Man, it did not look like PowerPoint. It looked so much better.
Does that make you happy, Microsoft guy?
It does make me happy. But I'll tell you, here's what made me really happy. The main point, unless I'm very much mistaken, the main point was never in the same place on more than one of your slides.
So that's where, but you do remember, though, the repetition of something that never changed. So that's where the balance that I was advising everyone else to follow earlier. Make sure that you have enough variety through a sequence, whether it's a PowerPoint presentation or a blog or an entire book, enough variety to keep the brain engaged, but also something that stays constant and supports your 10%. So if I were to give you a slight sort of view of my slides, there's a lot of visual variety that you'll have seen. But my main point, which is control your 10%, and I was giving some principles related just to attention, strictly to attention, that did not move, that stayed the same.
Okay, so you moved all of the supporting materials around, but that one, mm-hmm. when you reiterated it, was always in the same space?
Always in the same spot.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really cool. Sorry, I just get that. That's
no, that's tremendous.
That's a really fascinating.
I'm flipping through on SlideShare. She's got a 40 slide.
Yeah, we should link out to that.
Well, so, I was just zipping through it really quickly while you were talking to see what I could pick up, and I did not pick up that.
Yeah. Well, but I'm sure that even subconsciously, probably audience members would have felt that anchor. Is that part of what you're suggesting?
That was the point. So you stay engaged because when you have so much variety, what you're taking away from the brain is the ability to predict. The brain enjoys, if you're looking at what's the most advanced predictive engine on the planet, it's the brain, at least for now. The human brain has evolved to predict what happens next, because if we can accurately predict the future, that means we ensure our survival. And when you take that away from the brain, you're making it impossible to ignore, to look away, because it wants to know what happens next. But at some point, you do want to be in control of your 10%. So some things have to be kept constant throughout that presentation. So if you do have the slides and you scroll through them, you will see there is a main, let's call it agenda slide, so to speak. I don't necessarily like the word agenda, but it has the attention, memory, and decision-making circles, which are the core of what we do. And the scope of that presentation was just to share a few guidelines around attention only. And there's that one slide that has a foundation that does not change.
That is cool. That is really, really cool. So I took away some lessons, you know, on multiple levels from your session. And this one, I'm really glad you connected the dots, because I think all three of us certainly present. And I think a lot of our audience, I mean, whether it's a sales presentation or whether even, of course, if we're doing video online or other types of presentations that are verbal in nature, these are things that we have to. Well, we don't have to, but they might help us if we incorporate
almost
them, right?
Almost undoubtedly, they help us towards the goal. Yeah.
Wow, that's fascinating stuff. So, Rexy Media, we can find you guys at rexymedia.com. And on Twitter, Dr. Carmen Simon, you are at Are You Memorable?
Is that R and U?
Nope, it's spelled out. Are You Memorable? Just the phrase, okay. Are You Memorable, spelled out. So that is cool.
That is.
And where else can we find you? What's a good recommendation for our audience if they want to get in touch with you, or if they want to maybe get some coaching or attend a workshop or that sort of thing?
Yeah, the website is the best place for that. And there are also some presentations that we have on SlideShare. There's one popular one people are enjoying that has five main reasons people forget stuff. And that could be a good sequence.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. So we'll actually, in today's show notes, we'll link out to certainly your website and Twitter account and all that sort of good stuff. But we'll also we'll embed the SlideShare presentations. We'll embed the one from Inbound that we were referring to, and we'll also embed this. It was five reasons people forget things.
Yeah, five reasons we forget.
Okay.
That's the title.
Excellent. So if you're listening to today's show and you don't have the notes in front of you, you can find them on our website, growthedream.com/shows/045, because we're on episode 45 today. Man, this has been a lot of fun. I really enjoy this material. And of course, we tend to be science nerds anyway around here. So we really, like, if somebody comes with data and, you know, analysis and statistics that are...
really like to have the data to back things up, because there's so many opinions floating around out there. But when you can actually nail down some real hard data, it can basically help all of us whose opinions might have to be then altered because of that, but altered towards the truth.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, we really appreciate you being here. We're going to watch for the book Impossible to Ignore coming out June 3rd, I believe you said, 2016.
Yep.
And here's what I'd like to do. We would like to invite you back to talk about some more of this kind of stuff, maybe as the book is coming out or a little closer to the time the book releases. How's that?
That sounds wonderful. And we continue on the journey of controlling your 10%.
I love
it. Sounds great.
All right. Sounds great. Hey, thank you so much for being with us
today. Thank you, Carmen. It's been great.
Thank you, everyone.
Okay. So that was a good episode.
Oh, man. I'm glad you took notes.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna have to listen to this multiple times.
Yeah. I will obviously have to listen to it at least once more through and probably keep going back.
Because there's so much like I can use. Mm-hmm. You know?
I wonder what it's like to be her and have so much knowledge and then sit down to write. Oh, I don't know why I keep using the example of a blog post, but to sit down and write a blog post and get started, mm-hmm. I feel like it would almost be debilitating to have that much, oh, well, I want to do this or that, you know, like which direction am I going to go
you
in
know,
with
anybody,
this?
Though, that I think has deeply researched a subject can have a real hard time getting going with it,
mm-hmm.
you know, well, because they have so much information. It's like that's where you almost have to do some sort of outline or narrative outline
sure.
or something. Just and then go deep into each little step along the way.
Yeah. And pick something to accomplish, like with a blog post. I mean, most of our blog posts that we write for clients are 300 to 500 words. I tend to be verbose, so I'll go long if it's just for me, you know. But it's exactly that. Like, it's not just about being verbose. It's about trying to do too much, perhaps.
Right. Well, and, you know, even when I'm doing the blogs for our show here, and I really want to keep those to about 400 or so, I haven't come close to that yet. I keep going way over it.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I read them and I think, oh, wow, that was short. Oh,
they've been 600 to 900.
Yeah, they don't feel lengthy, so that's a good thing.
How do you do that?
But this is the thing that I constantly advise clients about is that
That was a compliment.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, but we can't unknow what we know, right?
Right.
And so,
although apparently we can forget it.
Well, but I mean, in terms of your own trade, for example, Rod, you, I mean, 30 years as a journalist, there are things that you have forgotten, you know, that I'll never know. But so much of what you know is like muscle memory. It's just so ingrained.
It. Writing is almost, when she talks about innate as one of the things there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so. Sometimes it's so quick and easy. Once I have the topic mm-hmm. and I know it, it just comes out. Vroom.
But for you to write to someone who's ignorant of writing, like if you were to sit down, let's say, and do a series of blog posts on how to be a better writer.
Right.
You have to write a book.
To put yourself in the, you should really, to put yourself in the shoes of the person that doesn't know what you know is very difficult because
you
can't unlearn what you've learned.
So very true.
That must be what happens to all those memories you lose. They turn into whatever compound is it that makes gray hair?
I would love to make gray hair. At this point, gray hair would be great.
So those are all your lost memories.
You clearly have not forgotten enough, David.
I mean,
according to Josh's theory,
which aligns with the you know white hair or white hair for wise. What's the thing?
Yeah,
wisdom.
A hoary head is a sign of wisdom.
Yeah, there you go.
Let's just go King James
King
on everyone.
James,
oh
right
my
there.
Gosh.
Woo! 1611 people.
Okay.
So
authorized.
I, what's funny is I used to say back. I enjoyed my hair when I had it. When I got married, I had hair down my back. It was down like halfway down my back.
You're saying plural hair.
Did you enjoy it fully though? Do you wish
there
you
were multiples?
Gone
I had
back.
I had a reasonably full head of hair at that time when I was 20 something. And
can we put a picture of this?
No,
in the show notes.
I don't have good digital photos of the. I have to scan something from that era. But but my joke back then was. I grew it out long to make room for my brain. Little did I know how badly that was going to backfire later. Like, I should have never said that.
Anyway, that's great.
That was just a joke. But anyway.
So I've got this theory now
based
off of this episode. I'm going to write my emails like so. I'm going to say in the beginning, here's the 10% I want you to remember. Then I'm going to write, blah, 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 you're awesome because of blah, blah, blah. And literally, I'm going to say the blah, blah, blah and not actually say it. So they're like, okay, this is interesting. And then I'll say, I'm awesome because blah, blah, blah. So we're thinking in an influencer, in this example, an influencer outreach type of thing.
Okay.
Because XYZ.
You're going to try to get someone to write about you or do something for
you. Yeah, anything. Okay. So let's work together and make some stuff that's five times better. Blah, blah, blah. And then in bold, I'll put what I actually want them to remember, which is like, you know, contact me, do this. Or let's set up a call, or whatever the like call to action is.
Let's make
or the
money together.
Yeah.
That is hilarious.
That's not so bad, actually.
We'll see if I ever actually
how that
do
works.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, watch for influencer emails from Josh. you'll know him when you see him. Guys, this was a lot of fun. Josh, it's always good to have you here. You should join us more often.
Oh, shut up.
Can a man miss one show? Good grief. Rod's missed like 17 for you know, every one of his kids.
Okay, so now that we've established his accuracy with numbers, that's fine.
Oh, that's funny. So if you met all 17, would you only remember 1.7 of them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that one would be Colin.
That's one. He's not 1.7. The 0.7 was going to be the tricky one.
Well, since there are only eight, he remembers 0.8, which rounds up to one. So there you go.
Sure.
But he hasn't had
Colin's
he's
twice
only,
the he's man.
He's only met one, though.
I know. So yeah.
Was.
Oh, well. Let us know what you remember out of this show. Hopefully it's to control your 10%. But
ooh, that's good.
Yeah.
Let us know what you remember out of this
but
show.
But yeah, it'll be interesting to hear from you. I could ask her questions all day because, like, this is so applicable and useful and fascinating.
I know you changed how you write blog posts for your team since you went to Inbound.
Truly.
Is there more that you've taken from this conversation that you think you'll try to distill to your team?
It actually, a couple of things that I'm gonna start to employ. I loved how she talked about building the supporting material that has to be there for the 90%. In other words, for the 10 to actually work.
Sure,
that was cool.
Rob Spiderweb.
I like that. But I also, it reminded me because I got out my notes. I have 3 pages of handwritten notes from her session at Inbound, which was what, 45 minutes long, maybe as long as our interview.
I saw you flipping through those during the show. I don't know if you ever actually got anything out of them during the show.
Yeah, there were a couple things, but okay. I realized how much I've forgotten from her presentation that I wrote down.
Well, probably at least 90%.
At least. So yeah,
that's what I was going to ask her next time.
If you write things down that you're hearing.
Yes, because that's I want to know if that's a wives tale or if it's true, because I feel like it's true anecdotally. You write it down and it embeds it in your memory better.
Well, we're going to have to ask her.
She can chime in on the comments.
I'm going to start a list of questions for her for next time.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds good.
If I remember.
Nice.
All right. Well, we want to hear from you. You can tweet all three of us at GTD Show.
Yeah.
For Grow the Dream Show. As I mentioned earlier, you can find today's notes on the web at growthedream.com/shows/045. And that'll be a good place for you to find all the links and embedded content. I know that all the links tend to go with the, you know, content of our show into the most podcasting apps. Not iTunes particularly, but most of the other podcasting apps get all the content pretty nicely.
Sure.
But embedded stuff like SlideShares does not.
And you're going to put some of that
so
stuff
yeah,
on
you want to you wanna come back to the website.
Yeah, if you
want
to see that, you're going to have to go to the website.
You can also comment there, ask questions, complain, whatever it might be that you want to do.
Post pictures of bacon and cats in the comments.
Absolutely. Oh, man, people keep asking for the webinar that we did, and I got to get it finished. It's my fault. I'm sorry. I will get it done ASAP so that we can share that with you.
Mm. We will continue to remind you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And we get an email or a tweet or something almost every day. Hey, where's the... Anyway, so I will do that as soon as possible. In the meantime, great show. We'll have another one next week.
Stay in charge of your marketing.
Control the 10%.
Be back here for Marketing Mondays.
Thanks for listening to the Grow the Dream Show. We invite you to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Get connected to our growing community, add your comments, ask questions, and listen to the archives on the web at growthedream.com/show.